Ty James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation. Blow the second switch. Blow the third switch.
Not the third switch.
Throw it, I say. Throw it.
The Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life. Life, you hear me? My creation. Life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Right. Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six. Five. Four. Three. Two.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yeah, baby. Guy James here with you. Welcome to the Guy James Show. So good to have all of you along with us this afternoon here in this December. What is this, Thursday? Man, I'm losing time of, losing track of my days here. Thursday already. Where does the time go through the week? Well, as you know, we had a little bit of technical difficulty. We redid the studio here somewhat, and I still don't know exactly what the problem was. That's something that's bothersome when you get it fixed and you don't know how you fixed it exactly. But anyway, thanks to Ben and to Bob, and we've got things going here now, and we're sure the sound quality is probably up and running and maybe just as good as can be today. Maybe I sound like, I probably don't sound exactly like myself. I've got a little bit of a cold, you see. Yes, I do. A little bit of a cold. Just won't go away. We live here in the South, you know, in Paradise in Florida, southwest coast of Florida, and never get sick. Just don't get sick. You know, you have your various maladies and all that sort of thing, but you don't get really, like, sick with colds and flu and that kind of stuff. I didn't have it for a long time anyway, but until recently. And every year about this time, when the snowbirds come down from the north, yeah, northerners, and they bring this cold and flu with them, and we get it now. I've got this bronchial thing going on, so anyway, I've got my little inhaler here. Never had an inhaler before. Cute little thing, yellow with a red cap on it and all that. So anyway, so much for sickness and all that. Welcome everybody on the Hit On Radio Network chat room. We hope the rest of you listening at other venues will join us over at Hit On Radio Network and log in the chat room. Great group in there. We're slowly building up some folks on there. A lot going on today. We're going to talk about the auto bailout coming up in just, about 15 minutes. We're going to have a guest with us. Her name is Wendy Thompson. And Wendy is a retired worker at the American Axle in Detroit and former president of the UAW local there. And they're organizing a caravan of auto workers to D.C., and they're going to do that on Sunday and Monday. So we'll talk to her and get her views on what's going on with the auto, I don't want to call it bailout, I guess. We're being encouraged not to call it that. We shall see. We shall see what happens there. I don't know. It doesn't look good right now. but maybe their influence. And as you know, I've been a supporter of unions all my life. Haven't been in one all my life. Haven't had an occasion to be in a union all my life. I once got fired over union organizing activities and got my job back. So we'll talk about that coming up around 3:25 today. How are you today? Doing okay? Is it nice where you are? Is it cold, blustery, snowing? Kind of an overcast day here in Southwest Florida. Currently, what, about 79 degrees outside, something like that. And so much for the weather. AT&T, 12,000 jobs down the tube, 12,000. U.S. Steel announcing 3,000 jobs down the tubes. Wow. That's all I can say. Wow. Just one after another, after another, after another. Hey, before I go too far today, and we'll talk about all this economic misery that we're going through with the auto companies and all, and what are your feelings about that? Do you drive a foreign car? Do you care if the auto industry goes down the tubes? The car I drive most of the time, my main car is a Chrysler product. However, the engine, I understand, is made right here in the U.S. by a Japanese company, and by the Mitsubishi. I think that's the way it is. So cars share parts back and forth. Ford owns Volvo. Who knows? They used to own Jaguar. I guess they sold that. General Motors, I don't know. It's hard to keep track of them all anymore. I'm not so sure that for a while, didn't Ford, I don't know. I'm not going to talk about it. The thing isn't exactly right. Corey Stone on the chat room says jobs. However, we can maintain the most jobs. That's what's important. Jobs, jobs, jobs. It doesn't matter how many cars we make if we don't have anybody to buy them. Henry Ford knew that well. Henry Ford learned that lesson very well. That's one of the main reasons Henry Ford paid his workers. He was among the first to pay people a decent wage because he figured if people made a decent wage, they would buy the products that they produced. They'd be able to. And we all know how that worked out. Worked out very well for Henry Ford and for a good many years. And it appears that maybe out of the big three, Ford might be in the best position right now financially. Who would have thought? Whoever would have dreamed maybe 30 years ago, while I was growing up, General Motors, as General Motors goes, so goes America. That was true. It was absolutely true. The thought of a company like General Motors going down the tubes, absolutely unthinkable. And I would say even for me, up until, what, 2-3 years ago, the thought of that, completely unthinkable. Completely unthinkable. So, I don't know. And here we have Toyota. We have who else? I don't know who all. Foreign automakers making cars right here in the USA. Honda, for one. So it's a mishmash going on and parts being shipped back and forth. And I do know all the foreign car makers here in this country don't have any unions in them. I know that. And for those of you that are anti-union, and a lot of people are, I say this to you. In no way in the world would this country be what it is without the union workers. No way. If the union movement hadn't come along when it did, there never would have been the great middle class in this country. You can say what you want to about unions, but without union organizing, this country would never have developed the way that it has. Never. And we'll talk about that once again just a little bit in a little while. I am starting to get inundated with emails once again, and I'll bet you are as well, and you can't turn on the TV now. Oh, the war on Christmas. Here we go again with the crazies claiming that there's some sort of a war on Christmas going on. Please, please, please. Could there be a more ridiculous premise by the right-wing talkers? Of course, you know who's leading this, O'Reilly, and he's leading the pack along with that crazy Mark Levin and Mike Gallagher and Glenn Beck. Well, don't get me started. You know, all of these guys claiming there's some sort of a sinister plot by the left to destroy Christmas. It's laughable, really. But then, as always, there are millions who believe this verbal sewage coming out of these guys' mouths. If they said it, it's got to be true. I know people that swear by all these guys. Look, I was raised as a middle-of-the-road Christian. Okay, I was a Methodist, all right? That's pretty middle-of-the-road, somewhere in the hierarchy between the Episcopals at the top and Catholics and, I don't know, the fundamentalists on the bottom. Methodists right in the middle there somewhere. And Christmas and Easter are the most holy times of the year for many of us that were raised that way. And it's up to each individual to choose which, if any, faith to follow. I mean, it's a personal choice, and no one should be coerced in any way to follow one religion or another. I mean, it's based on personal faith, in my opinion. What you think about my particular religious faith or lack thereof, it doesn't matter even, not even a tiny bit to me. You can believe what you wish, and I'll believe what I wish, and that's all there is to it, period. And I don't care if you contend that I'm all wrong in my beliefs. I don't care if you deride my faith or if you abhor it. It's my belief, and you don't have anything to say about it. And why would we argue over that? I don't understand. I never have. I guess that's why I call myself a liberal, because it's beyond my comprehension for people to sit around and argue about religion. You have your faith. If you're a believer, if you have a higher power that guides your life, whatever, it's yours. And believe me, it's the word faith, folks. We're not dealing in facts a lot of times here. We're talking about faith. So how can you sit down and argue? You know, I used to have this minister friend, Pastor Alvin. Great guy. He and I would go out and play, and he was a Lutheran minister, and he and I would go out and play golf. And we'd get into these big theological arguments, you know. And it is always the belief that by many in the Christian church, and it is one of the tenets of the Christian church, that if you have the opportunity to accept Christ in your life and you do not, then you're going to hell. Now, somebody that's never been extended the opportunity, I guess they're okay. I don't know. But if you've had the opportunity to accept Christ as your personal savior, and you don't, then you're going to hell. And that's a lot of Christians believe that. I don't. I don't believe that. And Pastor Alvin and I, we were out on the golf course one day, and I said, you mean that we've got this, let's say you're a pastor and you're walking through Outer Mongolia someplace, and you come to this little house on a hill, and there's a father, a mother, and three or four kids, and they're Buddhist or Confucius or whatever. But they've been living a good life. They're good parents. They're raising their kids with their faith. Honor thy father, thy mother, and basically tending to the golden rule and the tenets that we should all live by as far as decency toward one another and what's right and wrong in this world. And so you walk up and you knock on the door, and you're a Christian minister. You knock on the door and you say, guess what? You know, I've got this new faith I want to tell you about. I want to tell you about Jesus Christ. And, you know, if you accept this, man, this is going to be so good for you. I'm telling you, you've never had it so good, because I'm going to offer this to you. And the Mongolian couple and the family stand there and they look at you and they go, well, first of all, who are you? And secondly, we have faith, and we have a belief system in our family, and we live well, and we live by the golden rule and the seven steps to happiness, whatever you want to call it, Ten Commandments. Those people are going to hell if they don't accept your offer? I don't think so. But I know most people in the Christian church do believe that. And Pastors Alvin and I, we agreed to disagree on these things. But I don't care. And I don't think it's anything that war should be started over. I don't think any big arguments should be started over. It's a personal thing. So what I'm getting at here is I don't give a hoot whether or not you wish me a Merry Christmas, season's greetings, happy holidays, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy St. Nicholas Day, happy winter solstice day, happy Boxing Day, or happy Howdy Doody Day. I don't care. Do what you want. I won't be offended if you say Merry Christmas, and I won't be offended if you don't. It's up to you. And it's not going to be any skin off my nose, no matter what you decide to say. All these lawsuits and, Riley now's after these people out in Washington and back at all stores telling their people to say this and say that and all. Drives me nuts. I don't understand why people sit and argue over things like this. And yes, wars have been fought over. I don't understand it. I really don't. There have probably been more people killed in the name of religion in this world than anything else. So, on this show, we'll say Merry Christmas, we'll say Happy Holidays, we'll say Season's Greeting, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, whatever. Whatever floats your boat, we don't care. Maybe we can just cover it all, and I think Season's Greetings kind of does cover it all, but to me, there's nothing wrong with people saying Merry Christmas in public places. I don't know why anybody would get offended. There's this picture, and I know you all saw, and it was a real faux pas by the White House recently. Their committee, that societal committee, or whoever that plans their event planners, they sent out Hanukkah greetings for a gathering of Jewish leaders at the White House. And they sent these beautiful cards out and to the Jewish leaders. And you know, I'm sure some of you have seen it, what the picture was on the front of the card. Picture of a big Christmas tree with a bow on it. Now, I understand that was a big screw-up. That was a big screw-up. And a couple of Jewish leaders I read about it were really offended over it. Well, hey, don't be offended over it. It was a screw-up by the White House, and, you know, they're known for screwing up at the White House, so why would you get really offended over it? Laugh about it. Laugh about it. Enjoy your own season. Enjoy your family's beliefs. Do what it is you like to do, and forget what everybody else says. I don't understand. I'm never going to get that political correctness stuff about Christmas and the war on Christmas. I guess it's something for Bill O'Reilly to moan about, isn't it? It's something that, and of all people, I hear that Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes both hate Bill O'Reilly. I just saw that in the news the past few days. I wonder if that's true. But for the almighty buck, they put up with him because his ratings are good. And I even started to read a story last night where it said that Murdoch is somewhat ashamed of Fox. And that his wife is this young liberal gal, and she's turning him. No, not turning him that way. But turning him politically. I don't know. The world's going crazy here since the election. We got Hannity off of the frothing at the mouth every day about how they're coming to get him with the fairness doctrine. The guy's mad, I tell you, every day. I suppose if I were making, what, $15 million a year, whatever it is he's supposed to be making, I'd probably worry about losing that kind of income as well. Heard some guy talking about Boone Pickens losing $270 million in 1 week. And I said, well, I'd like to brag about losing $270 million in a week, wouldn't you? Wouldn't it be a great thing? You're at a dinner party this Saturday night with your friends. You say, hey, you know what? I lost $270 million last week. Ain't it great? It's no big deal because I got three times that much left. Why would you worry? And that's something else I don't think I'll ever understand. I really never will quite understand that whole deal. How much? When's enough enough? What is the old saying? Enough is never enough for those who think enough is too little. Did I butcher that? I think I got it right, actually. I don't know. I mean, after you've got $1 billion or $200 million, what's the use for the rest of it? How high a life can you live? And then you see these guys in Wall Street, these fat cat CEOs in Wall Street, and the big three automakers pulling down tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, and you just wonder, when is enough enough? I read a story about Robert Rubin when he was at what, Goldman Sachs? Citigroup, that people for years trying to figure out on Wall Street, the analysts and all that, trying to figure out what Robert Rubin even did at Citicorp. And they didn't think he really knew. He just occupied an office. And that's, I'm not kidding about that. No one could really figure out what he did. But he did take home a real nice paycheck. Hey, we're going to pause for a break here coming up. I heard this song. And it's one of those ones, I like the tune, I like the words. It doesn't have a thing to do with what we've been talking about today, but it does have to do with the old Tom Ten Credo is going crazy again about this wall they want to build between us and our friends in Mexico. And so I heard this song. What's it called? Who's going to build the wall? Maybe you've heard it before, but I hadn't before today. So I'm going to play it, and we're going to get a hold of our guest, and we'll be right back.
One thing that I most fear, it's a white man in a golf shirt with a cell phone in his ear. Yeah, who's gonna build your wall, boy? Who's gonna mow your lawn? Who's gonna cook your Mexican food when your Mexican maid is gone? Who's gonna wax your floors tonight down at the local mall? Who's gonna wash your baby's face? Who's gonna build your wall? Yeah, who's gonna wash your baby's face? Who's gonna build your wall?
And welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I see we've got a really good audience this afternoon. And of course, as you all know, the smartest audience in all of talk radio. Of course, compared to some of the right-wingers we listen to, you know what I mean. Hey, we'd like to welcome to the program right now Wendy Thompson. Wendy is with us, coming to us from Detroit this afternoon, where I understand the weather's sunny, but the mood is mostly cloudy, and we can all understand that. Wendy, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for asking me.
Well, thanks for joining us this afternoon. I know that you've got quite a history as a retired UAW worker at American Axle in Detroit, and you're doing something really, I think, momentous. I wish I could be a part of it. You're organizing a caravan of auto workers to D.C. this coming weekend?
Yes. This idea has been talked about since the crisis came to a head in the last couple of months, but nobody really did anything about it. So a group of us got together and decided that this is the way to be heard. It's not enough to just to send emails or to write your congressperson. So we're going to go down personally and try to talk to whoever we can, because there has to be a solution to this crisis above what's been talked about so far. And we don't really feel that the auto executives are representing us, and we disagree with the idea that workers have to give more concessions, because so many have been given already. And one thing we want to get across is that we're not just concerned about ourselves as auto workers, and I myself worked for 33 years, and I was a former president at American Axle, which, as people know, had a long strike this year. We're thinking of all working people, because, yes, this money is going to have to be given, but we can understand that once it's given, is it going to solve the problem? And the way it looks now, it won't necessarily solve the problem, so we had some ideas about what needed to be done to save not only auto worker jobs, but to save jobs and communities for everyone, because the heartland of the United States is what's involved here.
People forget that, don't they? You brought up the point not just for auto workers. People forget, where would the working class people in this country be, the non-union ones I'm talking about, where would they be without the union movement that took place so many years ago? What would the minimum wage be? We'd have virtual slavery again if it had never been for Walter Reuther and Samuel Gompers and the people that started the labor movement.
That's so true. And, you know, we hate the word bailout. We don't think that it should be looked at that way. We think that what's needed is that you have to rebuild American industries and our jobs and our communities. And what we have, hopefully, is a vision for a new America. And we think it's important to unite with those who want to save the environment. We think that's absolutely key, too. We need decent wages, we need health care for everyone, and retirement with dignity for everyone. So these are some of the ideas we're taking. We don't want people to think we're just thinking of ourselves.
Well, people that really know the situation know that, and people that really know the situation, you mentioned health care. Such a big advantage to overseas automakers. I can't be very specific here, but I think Honda and Nissan, for a couple of the Japanese have universal health care in their country, and so the automakers don't have to spend a tremendous amount of money for health care there, and we have a disadvantage there. Am I wrong?
Yes, this is key, and it just makes you wonder why the auto industry hasn't done anything to fight for health care for everybody, because then it would mean that it would come off their books. And so, you know, our feeling is the solution isn't to take health care away from people who have it, but rather to extend it to everyone. And if they get rid of our health care, it'll be harder for everyone to get health care. So, you know, there's a bill in Congress about extending Medicare so that it would cover everybody. It's called the single-payer system. It eliminates the insurance companies out of the equation, which is incredibly inefficient in terms of the amount of bureaucracy and paperwork that creates that doesn't really lead to good health care. So this is what we as a group feel that we need to push in Washington.
And you mentioned, Wendy, that this isn't a bailout. This is a loan they're asking about. And there is a precedent for this. I must say I'm remiss in not doing the research I should have done today. But I remember that, in the early 80s, Lee Iacocca went on behalf of Chrysler and got a loan from the government. It was a couple of billion dollars, and they paid it back in good faith.
Right. I mean, clearly there is a problem, though, with the auto industry in the sense of it needs to expand the concept of itself to be a transportation industry. Well, some ideas we had is why couldn't the industry start building mass transit systems? Clearly that is going to be important for the future. And alternative energy sources. Also, another idea we had is what about building wind turbines for windmills? Right now, they're not building them anywhere in the United States. I believe they're shipping them over from Germany. And they're very large, and that doesn't make any sense. And, you know, the precedent we look at is at World War II, they completely changed the auto plants to make war production. Well, this is a crisis, too. Why can't the government get involved in this if the auto companies won't do it themselves? And direct them that this is what they must do, is to begin to build mass transit systems and build things for alternative energy like wind turbines.
Is the now we've mentioned the turbines, and there is, by the way, I did a little story about one recently that's building the huge monstrous blades for these things here in the USA, helping a community get back on its feet again. But is this green movement, are these green cars and all, is this going to happen in time, do you think, to save the auto industry in Detroit, and maybe not in its present form, but save these jobs?
Well, I don't really have any faith, and a lot of people don't, in the people who are now running the auto companies to have a long-term vision on this thing. And this is what we say, that working people were forced to pay for the lack of vision on the part of the auto executives. And so the idea of the government getting involved in this is a way forward if it then is a question of citizens and workers and consumers having some say in the policy. So we think that they should have oversight and direct the auto companies to do this.
Well, the cry socialism is going up when we start talking about the government getting involved in private industry and all, but we already have many things in this country that could be considered to be, you know, something socializing things.
Sure, look at water systems.
Sure, water system, our roads, our airplanes, you know, so many things.
Right.
How tired are you of hearing about the $70 an hour you've been making?
Oh, yeah, that really drives us up a wall because it's so untrue. The $70 an hour wage, what they're doing there is they're taking the health care and the benefits for all retirees, and then they're putting that as part of the wage of a worker who is working today after they have downsized the industry, and so that you have a smaller number of people working. So certainly the one who is working is not getting that wage. And, again, you know, they downsized because they didn't build the products that were that people needed. They weren't prepared. They gave up on cars. They just focused on the vehicles that had a high amount of profit per vehicle. And we know why, because they could make more money that way. And so now they're caught with a problem. So we don't think that we should have to pay for that, but to say that a worker going and working very hard, any of us who have worked in an oil plant know how hard hard the work is, are making $70 an hour is completely ridiculous. It's more like $28. And that is not true for all the new hires that are going to come in at $14 an hour. And by the way, at American Axle, that's what that strike was all about, is that workers who have been working there for 15 years were told now their wages have to go down to $14 an hour also. And, you know, if the good wages go down, then that means everybody else's wages will go down, too. And how can we get out of this crisis we're in if nobody can afford to buy anything? That's what's causing the problem. So if we're going to put money back into circulation and end the crisis, we need everybody to have higher wages. By the way, that's one of the things we're going to say, too, that we have to have the Employee Free Choice Act. I don't know whether people know about that, but that is basically where you would have the right to have a union in your workplace if the majority of the people signed cards instead of having an election where management's allowed to intimidate you and fire you the way it is now.
Oh, would our corporate friends do that? Say our good friends at Walmart, for example. Surely they wouldn't intimidate people about joining a union, would they?
Well, it happens, and I think a lot of people know about it. When they've done surveys about who wants to be in a union, it is a large number of people, much more than are in a union. And the reason why there's that difference is because of the fear that's created by the intimidation that's been going on.
I've mentioned on my show before, and I mentioned to you during the break there, I got fired from a very good job many, many, many years ago when I was a young man. There was a union drive going on, and I was working with the union and had worked for this company for quite a long time. And we had a UAW drive going on, and one day I got called in the office and said, you know what, you're out of here. And why am I out of here? Well, because you've been consorting with those union guys trying to get a union in this place, and they fired me. And I got a hold of the labor relations board, and later, by the way, the drive was unsuccessful, but the labor relations board got my job back for me. And
great. Yes, you're a perfect example there.
I am. I know what that intimidation is like, calling in a whole big room full of people and saying, you know what, if you're successful in getting this union drive here, we'll pack this place up and we'll move it to one of our non-union locations. And that's what they did during that. They promised to do that. So
right.
The people that don't know that exists, the terrible pressures put on people.
Terrible pressure. And so the solution really is to have everybody be organized into the union, and that way they can't play us off against each other. So if it became easier to get into a union, then I think that would go a long way to solve the problem. And hopefully that Employee Free Choice Act, Obama has said that he supports it. So hopefully it'll go through with the new Congress, because I think it'll make a big difference.
Oh, and sure.
Definitely to the raising of wages and start turning things around.
And, you know, the old story, and I think it's pretty much gone away, but then again, a lot of the union movement has gone away in this country, the numbers of workers. You know, we heard those stories for years. Oh, we had the Jimmy Hoffas, we had this and that. Yes, unions have had warts over the years, but I think by and large, that's worked itself out, and we know what's best for the worker. I mean, I know we know what's best for the worker. No big company like Ford, Chrysler, or General Motors is going to come out and offer you anything if they don't have to.
That's absolutely true. Now, you know, obviously the fact that unions have been giving up concessions is a problem. It's hard to convince people to want to be in a union if all the unions are doing are giving concessions. And so, you know, we feel that really too much of that has been going on, and that it is not the way forward to take the stance that the union is going to give even more concessions. Why join a union if that's the case? And we've got to start turning things around. But unions have potential of being democratic organizations where you have a say. And so people have to participate. And that's what we're doing, is we feel that we have got to become more active in terms of putting forward a solution to the crisis that's going on and what's the way forward for working people. So that's why we're encouraging people to join with us. And not just auto workers, but members of the community and anybody who's listening to this today. We have a website you can go to. It's www.autocaravan.org. And that will give you the information of where we're going to be meeting in Washington on Monday. We're going to spend one day there. And so anybody is free to come and join with us, and we hope that you do. And also on the website, you'll find information on what it is that we would like to tell the people in Congress when we get there.
It's Auto Worker Caravan?
Let's see. I wish I had it in front of me. It's Auto Caravan.
Auto Caravan. Okay, because my paperwork here IPA says it's autoworkercaravan.org.
Okay, well then, if you've got it in front of you, I don't have it in front of me right here. So let's go with what the
Auto Worker Caravan. And if any of you have any doubts, email me and I'll make sure you get the right thing. So tell me a little bit about the logistics of this thing, if you have time. You're going to go from Detroit, and it's not necessarily all union members. It's how big a caravan are you planning? And by the way, let me just say this before I spoke to a congressman I've known for a long time this morning and mentioned this, and he said, you know, one of the things that people have been here a long time in Washington, one of the things they remember the most, and I said, what's that? And he said, the time the truckers all got together and came to Washington. He said that was a real scene. So you're on the right track here. Tell us, what's going to be the size and scope of this?
Well, we recognize that we started organizing this quite late. There was supposed to be some others were talking about a caravan, and then they canceled because they said they got too much interest, and that didn't make any sense. So we know that we've got people coming from St. Louis, from Anderson, Indiana, from New Jersey, and from Columbus, Ohio, and Warren, Ohio, as well as Detroit and Flint and Saginaw. But we're not sure.
Warren, Ohio, home of Delphi.
Yes.
Packard Electric, now Delphi, yes.
But the more people who join us, the better. So, we'll be able to accomplish more the more people we have. But we've got, like, two contingency plans, one depending on our size. So we're prepared to be either a small number of people and still do what we can, or to be a large number of people. And on the website, you'll have a place where you can go park your vehicle that will be within walking distance of the Capitol. And that information is all up on the website.
Oh, great.
And we're planning to be there at 8:30 in the morning and spend the day.
Yeah, because you're looking at about a 9-hour drive maybe from Detroit?
Right.
Yeah, that's about what it is.
We're having a rally in Detroit for people in Michigan. And that information is up on the website, too. It'll be from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock. I think it's 2727 Second Avenue. I don't know if you've got that information in front of you.
No, I don't.
And we're going to have community speakers to see us off, and we'd like supporters, even if you can't go to Washington, if you would want to come to the rally in Detroit that we're going to have from 2 to 4 to see us off, that would be great. And after the rally, we'll be getting into vans and heading on down.
Well, thank goodness gas isn't $4.25 a gallon again right now. What is gas in Detroit right now? I'm kind of asking everybody.
Oh, it's about, I've seen it as low as $1.59 now.
So. Wow, that's good. Yeah, it's
unbelievable.
It's more than that here, yeah. Oh,
but unfortunately, it's because nobody can afford to go anywhere, and so therefore everybody's been laid off, and that's what's caused the prices to go down. So it's not for a good reason, and we can't count on it for the future at some point.
Well, that's one thing about that word,
alternative energy.
That word layoff these days, it usually doesn't mean take a short hiatus and come back, does it? It means you're done forever, usually now.
We've got a serious crisis going on
yes.
here.
Well, I certainly hope that you can work toward getting this. I'm in complete sympathy with you over this. I heard Jennifer Granholm speak yesterday about it. I know she's very passionate about it. And Carl Levin, of course, is very passionate about it, and Debbie Stabenow is very passionate about it. And I hope that people can speak to their compadres and help get this worked out, because we just cannot let this industry go down the tubes. Just can't. I can't.
It'll affect many, many people.
Yeah, and just a lot of people. And you know, it's the old domino thing. You lose your job. You all of a sudden you're not eating out. The guy that was working at the restaurant, all of a sudden, well, he can't go to the movie anymore. It's a lot of people think, well, this doesn't involve me. Yes, it does. It'll get to everybody. Wendy, I want to thank you so much for being with us today
for asking me. I really appreciate it.
Well, and Wendy Thompson, retired American Axle worker, former president of UAW Local 235 in Detroit. Head on over, everybody, autoworkercaravan.org, and you can learn all. Maybe some of you listening will want to join them. So, Wendy, thanks so much for being on the program today.
And thank you.
Well, nice lady. 33 years working in a union shop. Yes, she in fact does know what it's like working in a union shop for 33 years. So, I just hope this whole thing can get straightened out to where it's works out good for everybody, because I know how a lot of people feel about loaning money, and it's too bad this came on the heels of the Wall Street thing, right? I heard somebody say that they don't mind throwing plenty of money after guys that take a shower in the morning, but they don't want to help out anybody that takes a shower after they come home from work. You know what I mean, the working man. It's too bad that this Wall Street thing took place first and the government started shoveling money to them by the carload and, well, didn't administer it right, and there's been no correct oversight over it. And now American public and the Congress, not wanting to magnify the mistake that they possibly made with that, now they're holding back on this industry and these jobs. Think of these jobs. I think Ford, General Motors, and Chrysler all together have about 250,000 employees amongst them. That's the last figure I heard. But think of all the other jobs down the line from those that are dependent upon the auto companies. People that make springs for the seats. People that make this and that. All these little smaller industry, cottage industries that have grown up around the auto industry, you're talking about several million jobs if they go down. So I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know the answer. I don't know in what form these companies ought to exist. I don't know whether General Motors ought to sell off Pontiac and Hummer for sure, and GMC and Buick. That's been talked about, that there'd be nothing left but Chevy trucks, Chevys and Cadillacs. If they downsize and they'll get rid of Hummer, who bought a Hummer in the first place? Huh? Every time I see one of those, and I know why people buy those. I know the guys buy them. They got the big shot of testosterone there, you know. Might as well have testosterone painted on the side of your Hummer. And I know some of you, I bet none of my listeners have Hummers. I bet they don't. Damn small percentage. Anyway, so I'm not going to offend anybody listening, I guess. But, you know, you might as well have testosterone mobile painted on the side of a Hummer. And so the guys buy those things, and gals too, they buy those. I'm a big shot, I'm driving me a Hummer here. Every time I see somebody driving one of those things, I think, man, are you stupid? I mean, that's the truth. That's what I see. Every time I saw some old guy, must have been 75 years old, driving one of those. Now, first of all, I live in Florida. He doesn't have to worry about off-roading this thing or, you know, the snowstorms coming. And some 75-year-old guy and his wife could barely make it up into the cab of this thing driving down the road. Just driving this Hummer because this is cool. No, it isn't. You're stupid. You're stupid. You know. There's a dealer not far from here. It's next door to a big Pontiac dealer. And there's a, the reason I know this is there's a Taco Bell right next door to it. And when you go through the drive-thru, which I don't do very often, but when you go through the drive-thru at the Taco Bell, you're looking right into the lot of this Hummer dealership. Brand new place, just built maybe 2 years ago when the Hummers were like bang zoom, the big thing to have. You ought to see, and they at any one time would have at least 100 of them sitting there. And, of course, Naples, Florida is right next door, so, you know, there's plenty of dough. And I don't know how much these things cost now. I had, what, $50,000, $60,000? Those little ones are a little bit less, I think. But that lot's getting pretty empty right now. And I know the dealers that put those in, and I feel sorry for the people that work for them. They're mechanics and salesmen and all, but you know, Hummer's not going to survive. Surely they're not going to survive. And General Motors also is getting thinking about dumping the Buick brand. And they already dumped the Oldsmobile brand and the Pontiac brand and the GMC pickup truck, the truck division. By the way, what difference is there between a GMC truck and a Chevrolet truck? I don't know over the years. You could never tell except the insignia on it and a little tweak here and there about like knowing the difference between a Ford and a Mercury in the old days. So I don't know. And Ford, they say, may dump the Mercury brand. Which one of it owns Volvo? I think it's Ford. They talked about getting rid of that. Imagine General Motors just with Chevrolet trucks and Cadillac. Boy, that would be a real... But whatever has to be done to save these jobs. And that's the other thing that kind of galls me quite a bit, actually. Here we've got the CEOs of these companies gone to Washington, D.C. and said, give us money, give us money, give us money. Give us, what is it, over $30 billion right now. And I agree, some money needs to be spent there. But give us money, give us money, give us money so we can get rid of about 30,000 jobs. Where's the happy medium here? I guess do you have to sacrifice the 30,000 to save the rest? Maybe so. I don't know. But anyway, I do want to thank Wendy Thompson once again for being our guest. It's good to hear from one of the real folks out there that's put heart and soul into the auto industry for so many years. And there are so many people that have. I know people that have worked in the Delphi in Warren, Ohio. That used to be Packard Electric. They make all the wiring harnesses for General Motors cars. And that place is getting, you know, once thriving place, 6,000 jobs. It's being cut down to nothing. So pension benefits are getting hurt. Many, many people here where I live who come here and spend the winters have retired from General Motors, and they've got a big big meeting hall here where the General Motors folks all get together, the UAW folks get together, and they're tremendously worried about their pensions and their benefits, and I don't blame them. If you've been promised something by this company, you should get it. Whether or not you think it was too much they got or not, if it's promised to you, you should get it. You worked under the premise that you were going to get this health care. You worked under the premise where you're going to get this certain pension. And by gosh, you should get it. You should get it. But this $70 an hour thing is insane. And, you know, it's one of these things that caught on. And every right-wing talker you hear, yeah, those automakers are making $70 an hour. Well, I know a lot of people that have worked in the auto industry, and I don't know anybody that made $70 an hour. And I'll tell you something else. If people are going to sit by and blame the union on this, and like I said, the union isn't completely blameless on this, but Those big gas hogs that were designed and built, they weren't designed by the union people. The okay to build them wasn't given by the union people. They built what they got the orders to build. That's all. Keep that in mind. They only built what they were told to build. So, we're all guilty. Most of us. Most of us. Who hasn't owned a gas hog sometime in your life? I have. I personally like performance cars. Very high performance cars. And some of them drank gasoline like there's no tomorrow. But that's back when I was younger and found out that gasoline wasn't going to last forever. My, when we're young, don't we think lots of things are going to last forever? Yes, we're going to have our health forever. Yes, there will be all the natural resources that we could ever dream of in our lives. It's all going to last forever. That's what we think when we're young. 866-546-5254. And we're coming up on news here in just a couple of minutes, so hold off if you're going to call until after the top of the hour. But after the top of the hour, I hope you will give us a call. And we look forward to it. I want to talk a little bit about things that are going by the wayside for the middle class in this country. And the middle class is sacrificing a tremendous amount right now. Tremendous amount. Just these auto workers. Think what's happening to them. It's okay for Wall Street. Shovel all the money we can fastly borrow or print, send it to Wall Street. And then again, we've got GM. I understand that their worth, their actual worth on paper is only around $4 billion, and they want $18 billion now to keep going. Heard one of them say that they needed $9 billion to keep going next month. So I don't know what the answer is, and this is one of these times we hope and pray that our legislators in Washington will take a good, honest look at this, have their entire staffs working on this, listen to the experts, find out what's the right thing to do, lay it out in front of the American public, find out how the American public feels about it, and then let's do it. I don't want anybody to say, well, we can't do this, we can't do that. Heard them talking about the green cars. The technology doesn't exist. Let me tell you something. For those that say the technology doesn't exist to build green cars, I remember a president long ago when I was a young man saying that we're going to go to the moon before the decade is over. I remember that as though it were yesterday. And you know what? When he said that, the technology to do that did not exist. And we did go to the moon before the end of the decade. So I don't want to hear anybody saying in this country, well, the technology doesn't exist. We can't do this. We can't. Bull. I remember people laughing at Wernher von Braun. And NASA people. And Kennedy. Gonna send a guy to the moon. We don't know how to do that. Well, we learned how. And we developed the technology. And this is the United States of America. And if these green cars need to be built, more fuel-efficient cars, we can do it. We can do it. Because this is America, by God. And there's nothing that we can't do when we put our minds to it. So, please keep that in mind. Don't buy this line that, you can't do this in Detroit because, the technology's not there. It can be there, and it can be there in fairly short order if we put our minds to it. If we just put the effort forth to get it done, we can do it and save all these jobs and maybe save this country right along with saving these jobs. My God. Never thought I'd see this. Never did. We're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. Don't go away. We will be back. You're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
Rutgers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. On the verge of collapse, the U.S. auto industry returns to Congress today seeking more than $30 billion in emergency federal loans to survive into the new year. It's a high-stakes drama for domestic auto workers and the millions of U.S. jobs dependent on the auto industry.
Millions of jobs will be lost in this country if we lose this industry.
That's United Auto Workers President Ron Gettelfinger at an emergency meeting of the UAW in Detroit, where the union is considering more concessions to get those federal loans for the auto industry. GM, Ford, and Chrysler employ roughly 250,000 people, and more than a million retirees get auto company pension checks. Gettelfinger says these federal bridge loans are critical to the industry's survival in the United States. And he says workers and their unions are not to blame for the auto industry's crisis.
Are we going to blame the auto workers who are, by the way, 10% the cost of an automobile? Or are we going to take a look at what's happened to our economy, to the housing crunch, to the Wall Street bailout and the failures on Wall Street?
The UAW says it may scale back its jobs bank benefit that pays workers for a time after they're laid off. The union may also allow the auto companies to delay payments into a retiree health care trust fund. On the heels of new numbers showing a drop of 250,000 jobs in the United States in October through November, Wednesday brought yet another day of mass layoff announcements. Jesse Russell reports.
According to the ADP National Employment Report, 250,000 U.S. jobs were lost in the United States from October to November. Since August 2006, the construction industry alone has shed 521,000 jobs. So it didn't come as a surprise Wednesday when the country's largest steelmaker, U.S. Steel, announced plans to cut 3,500 salaried and union positions. There has been a major drop in steel orders as new home construction continues to stall, and the auto industry watches sales plummet. The layoffs amount to 13% of the company's North American workforce. The job cuts will come at three locations, one in Minnesota, another near Detroit, and a third near St. Louis.
The family of a Walmart contracted worker trampled to death in shopping the day after Thanksgiving is suing, asking unspecified damages for wrongful death. New York City's Retail, Wholesale, and Department Store Union has called the incident a tragedy and is calling for an investigation of the company's safety protocols.
Here is today's economic report. The U.S. service sector posted its worst job slump in recorded history. The index compiled by the Institute for Supply Management fell from 44.4 in October to 37.3 in November. According to the organization, an index under 50 means the sector is contracting. The service sector accounts for 80% of U.S. economy, so the number is startling to economists. Hotels, restaurants, banks, retail, and more make up the service sector.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
You count down. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast.
Your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Yes. In fact, you are listening to Guy James here on the Head On Radio Network at the Guy James Show. And welcome. Glad to have all of you along this afternoon. We've got all of our tech problems worked out. I understand the perfect. The sound is absolutely perfect. Right? Well, maybe not perfect, but good at least. Hey, thanks for joining us here. And if you'd like to join the program, and we hope you do, give us a call, 866-546-5254. I've got some questions I'd like to ask some of you, and I sure hope that I get a response from you. Don't be one of those ones, so I can't talk on the radio. Call me and let me know what you're talking about. Have you bought a new car lately? Any of you considering buying a new car? Have you been out trying to buy a car? Have any of you been to a car lot trying to buy a car and maybe applied for credit and they said, what are you kidding? I understand that things are really tough out there right now. I haven't done that myself. Frankly, won't be buying a car for a long, long time, I hope. No, let me just rephrase that. I won't be buying a car for a long, long time, no matter what. no hoping about it. But I'm hearing horror stories. I've heard some from friends that was out looking for a car and found the car they wanted, and they wanted everything but their firstborn down to buy the car. And it's making it tough, and it's making it tough on the salespeople, and if the salespeople aren't selling the cars, the mechanics and the secretaries and everybody that the dealerships, they're not making any money. They're getting laid off. A lot of dealerships going out of business. It's a mess. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Kevin from New York.
Hi, Kevin.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah. Basically, they're trying to give away cars, and I'm saying that with the most sarcasm.
Do you live in New York? Do you own a car?
Yeah. They have offers here. Buy one, get one free.
Oh. But what do you buy? A Cadillac and get a Yugo with it? By the way, I saw a Yugo went out of business a couple weeks ago. I thought they'd been out of business for 20 years.
Yeah.
But...
me too.
do you own a car in New York?
No.
Don't need one, do you?
No. That's part of the reason why I came back.
Do you ever get the desire just to jump in a car and drive out into the countryside or something?
No. No. You know, it's like I've got that out of my system when I was living outside of New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've lived my Jack Kerouac fantasies. Right now, I look for... I enjoy walking. I enjoy taking the train because it's a lot more mentally stimulating. And, like, to get to work, I have to cut through Central Park.
Oh.
So, like, my commute, it's one of the things that I'm enjoying the most day to day because, you know what, I take the train, which is about a 45-minute train ride. I get to read, you know, people watch or whatever, cut through Central Park, and which is a nice 15-minute walk, and... look at the swans floating in the lake.
Oh, yeah.
You can't beat that.
No, yeah, no, that's true. Central Park, a thing of beauty in downtown,
yeah,
Manhattan, uptown. It is. It's gorgeous. I love it there, particularly this season with the lights up and all that. I'll tell you, for all of you who have never been to New York during this particular season, you know, in a Rockefeller Center and Central Park and, oh, man, it's great. It really is. I envy you getting to be there.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, it's just when I was living in, you know, and I don't want to knock other people's lifestyles, but for me it was suburban hell. I just felt like a caged animal.
Mm-hmm. Well.
You know, I really did.
Well, certainly you live in an area where everything is available to you. In a short distance, everything's packed together. And I personally think that that's the way life is going to be for just about everybody again someday.
It is. It is. There's a documentary out on the web called The End of Suburbia.
Oh. No, I haven't seen that.
And they talk about it where, and like real estate in New York City, even in the worst areas where I wouldn't send somebody I hate out to.
Mm-hmm.
houses are going for almost $1 million.
Yeah, I know. I read an article recently that some guy in one of the buildings, you know, along Park Avenue, in a co-op there, you know, he owned a big fancy apartment there worth several $1 million. Anyway, he bought a closet down in the basement of this building. A closet. It was 8x10. I still can't believe
it. Prison cell.
8x10, and he paid $585,000 for it.
Yeah.
Gee.
You know what? I could get in Florida for that, but you pay in other ways in Florida. Either way, they're going to get you.
In Florida, $585, it won't buy you a house on the beach or anything, but it'd buy you a pretty nice house.
Yeah, but you pay in other ways in Florida.
For those of you who don't understand that, we have here what we call the Sunshine Tax. And, yes, we pay in many other ways.
New York, at least you know what you're getting up front.
Yeah.
And, you know, for those who, like my parents, who are making out like bandits, if your house is already paid for, you're sitting pretty.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. And they still have the rent controls and all that in New York?
Yeah, but it was kind of cut under the Giuliani administration. I don't know what the deal is with that.
Yeah, I really don't know either. Never did know a whole lot about it, other than you couldn't raise your rent if you were a landlord for a certain amount of time.
You see, the city, it's like, it's no cost to the tenant. I think the city supplements the value.
Oh.
Okay, it's not like, okay, he's only getting, let's say, $200 a month on an apartment that's $1,200. Okay? Mm-hmm. What happens is the tenant will pay like the $200 or $300, but the landlord will then get an allowance from the city or state covering the gap.
I see.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you know.
Well, yay or nay on the automobile loans to the companies? Where are you at on it?
I say yay on the condition everybody gets fired.
Yeah.
That entire leadership gets fired. You know, I wish I could do a performance like that in a job and get that kind of, and I don't even, you know, I wish I could get away with what they're getting away with on any job that I have.
Yeah.
Still get paid and get my bonuses and all that.
Don't you know it? Isn't that the truth? Man, oh, man, there isn't anybody in the country outside of these fat cat CEOs that would keep a job with the job performance that they have. And you know, and I'm not necessarily going to sit here and say maybe it wasn't all their fault. I don't know.
It is entirely their fault.
To get the kind of money they've gotten for terrible performance of the company? Mm-mm.
Yeah, it is entirely. Have you ever... I'll never forget, one time I flew into Detroit. Detroit is what you call it's like social apartheid. Outside of Detroit, you have the wealthy. You'll never say, you think Florida has golf courses? Fly over Detroit.
Oh, yeah.
And go to some of those Detroit suburbs like Grosse Pointe and all
that. Yeah, Grosse Pointe. Grosse Pointe, fairly nice, yes.
Yeah, you know, forget it. And then go to downtown Detroit. Talk about social apartheid.
Oh, down where Tiger Stadium is.
Yeah.
Don't you dare walk two blocks north of Tiger Stadium.
Yeah.
I haven't been there in a long time, but there was a time that you better not.
Yeah. Okay. You know, Detroit is social apartheid at its utmost. And then when you fly over, it's like, you know, I thought Florida had golf courses. Not like the Detroit area.
Well, I know of a couple down in Naples I'll put up against just about anybody's. But
Florida, come on, that's a golfer's paradise.
Yeah, you know? It is.
But I'm just saying, I think the Detroit area can give Florida some competition now, a little bit. You know, it's like, but you wonder, and the thing is, Michigan is not really built for Florida. You can say it's kind of built for golf. Michigan isn't really. So it was a shock to me seeing that many golf courses.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're okay here with the golf, except it's terribly expensive. And there's a little matter of these fire ants. You got to watch out for them when you go out there.
Compared to New York, anywhere is cheaper.
Yeah.
Golf. New York has the most expensive golf in the country.
And when it gets to the point where you got to spend $100 just to go out and play a round of golf,
that's a cheap.
That's too rich for my blood.
Yeah. That's a cheap round of golf up here.
Wow. And to think I used to join a country club back when I lived in Ohio for about $250 a year and play every day, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you.
Okay, same to you, bud.
Take care. Yeah. Bye now. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. A note here. I see where the Fed wants to drive down home interest rates to around 4.5%. And that way everybody could go out and refi and the new home loans would be cheaper and all that. Wouldn't that be good? You think how much 4.5% would save you if you're just a couple of percent on, say, a $100,000 loan? Probably, what, 1.5% a month or so on a 30-year fixed? I'm guessing. Wow. Let's hope they can find a way to do that. Hey, I constantly talk about the right-wing crazies on this program, and I wonder what you think about it. Michelle Malkin, and I know almost all of you know who I'm talking about, that crazy, she writes that, and she has a column in my local newspaper. It just steams me that they would put that smirking woman in the column here. It really does. Hate monger, if there ever was one. Anyway, she writes that Barack Obama is giving Michelle Obama a $30,000 ring to show his appreciation for her support during the recent campaign. This was her story. I guess she broke this. And, of course, Malkin and I had to have a few nasty comments to make about it, about him buying her a $30,000 ring to show his appreciation for her. The only problem is it's not true. It's not true, says the Obama camp. Didn't happen. Not going to happen. Now, first of all, I don't care if he does buy his wife a $30,000 ring. He's got money. He earned money. He can spend it any way he likes to. And he's a private, you know, he's a private citizen. He can do what he wants to with his money he made in the private sector. So, his private, do what you want. If you want to buy your wife a $30,000 ring, you go for it. But it isn't true. And the Obama people say it isn't true. And I'm always wondering, and perhaps somebody could explain this to me. I think I know the answer, but I'm always wondering about the likes of Michelle Malkin and a Drudge and a Hannity and a Limbaugh and the Mike Gallagher, oh God, and Mark Levin, nutcase Mark Levin, and Glenn Beck, even maybe more of a nutcase. When they tell huge lies to their audiences almost daily, do the listeners and the readers ever catch on about their credibility? Does their credibility even matter to their fans? I guess not. I mean, there may be assorted intellectuals and ideologues in the party, maybe in a few centrists. But there's no longer an intellectual or even an ideological wing. And as somebody said recently, I don't remember who it was who said it, the party now belongs, the Republican Party I'm talking about, it belongs to Joe McCarthy and his heirs. And his heirs are Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Sarah Palin and Rush Limbaugh. It is in their genes. Ooh, gives me the willies thinking about it. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hello, Guy. Jennifer in Washington State.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, may I go back to talking about this Big Three bailout?
Sure.
Well, the other day I had plan A, which was the oil companies should bail them out.
Yeah.
Now I'm thinking plan B. which I think should be, instead of giving the money to these people who obviously do not know how to run a business, I mean, if you think about it, there's absolutely no reason on God's green earth why an automobile company should go out of business unless they're building an inferior product or not building the type of product that people really want. So apparently these people don't even understand the business they're in. So they, you know, they need to go bye-bye. But I want to see the jobs preserved. And I'm thinking, what if we gave that money as a loan to Tesla Motors and other companies, new companies, that will build products that are appropriate for the time we live in, a time when we've reached peak oil, a time when we have global climate change, when we need a different kind of vehicle altogether? Why not encourage that and offer jobs to people in the process? Doesn't that make more sense than making the same mistake over and over and again? What are we, dogs that puke and go back and eat it again? Come on.
Well, that's true. But the conundrum there is, how soon can this be done, and what do we do about the several million people who lose their jobs in the meantime?
Well, you know, I don't think it would take that long. I think the technology really is there. I mean, GM had the technology for the, but they killed it.
Well, we hear reports like that. Heard those stories over the years. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I wish I did.
I wish they would ask me. I could put some bees in their little bonnet for them.
Yeah. Well, you know, you live out there in the country that Bill O'Reilly's complaining about now. You know, he's mad at you Washingtonians.
I know. We're just a bunch of heathens out
there. A bunch of godless heathens out there that...
we are.
And, you know, get O'Reilly on your case like this, why, you're in trouble.
It's very interesting. If we're such godless heathens, why in thunder are there so many churches in this place?
Yeah.
We have more churches. churches and bars, you know, the typical small town.
Sure.
It's amazing. But, you know, I was just reading this morning that food stamps, the use of food stamps, is on the rise to the point where in September, more than 31.5 million Americans used the program, up 17% from a year ago. People are going hungry. And it's really a sad thing because, you know, we've given all this money to people that don't take a shower after they come home from work.
Right.
I love that one.
Right.
We've given them all this money, and it's supposed to be making loans available for people and improving our economy, and isn't doing any of that. There's absolutely no money available for the average person to even get a new credit card or buy a car. And yes, they're just about giving cars away, but it doesn't seem like the money is available for the loan. Nobody wants to let go of anything. All these banks are doing is buying up smaller banks and growing until we'll probably have maybe two or three banks, maybe four, in the whole damn country.
Sure.
That control all of our wealth.
Yeah, consolidate. Get back. You're talking Big Brother type stuff. There is going to get to the point one day where we have the United States of Walmart and a couple of different banks. And gee whiz, I hope we don't have to wear those uniforms. You know.
Ooh, so do I. and the thing is, people are going hungry. Literally,
yes.
Hungry. The food banks don't have enough food.
I know. It's a serious problem here locally. Food banks are hurting very, very badly, don't have near enough supplies for the season. And they're wondering what they're going to do. The Salvation's out. Salvation Army's out working overtime. It's a tough time. It is a tough time.
I had to go out and buy groceries the other day, and I could not believe in this pre-Christmas season how few people are out shopping. I mean, they did their Black Friday thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hurt a few people, killed one. Woo-hoo.
Yeah.
But they're not shopping now. And I understand this Black Friday was dismal.
It was, as far as selling things for profit. Some of the retailers sold a lot of special items that they had as loss leaders to bring people in the stores, but people didn't buy anything else is what I'm hearing. So
right, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't celebrate Christmas myself because I'm an ungodly type.
Well, everybody in Washington, state of Washington's that way, according to Bill Riley.
Pretty much. We're sort of like Madison, Wisconsin out here.
Or Berkeley, yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
But
Now we got all the people in Madison, Wisconsin mad at us. Very liberal town, Madison, Wisconsin.
What are you saying about Madison? They say it's just full of liberal.
It's liberal heaven, Madison, Wisconsin is. It most certainly is. I've been there many, many times, and if that's not a liberal town, I don't know what is.
I haven't been to Madison, Wisconsin since the late 60s, and at that time it was a very conservative place.
Not anymore. No.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, not anymore. Hey, Jennifer, got to run. Thank you so much for calling today. And have a nice rest of the day. It's, 1:27 in the afternoon where you're at?
Yes, that's right.
You've got plenty of the day left. Enjoy it.
Yes, and the sun is shining.
Good. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
We're having a big discussion the other day about what started all this mess. Would the auto industry be in trouble had it not been for Wall Street having so much of a problem? I don't know. Corey Stone on the chat room has mentioned the Glass-Steagall Act. Of course, the repeal of that, and I don't remember what year it was, right around 1998, 1999, right in that era someplace, it surely led to a big part of the problem that we have right now. And that was something that back, I don't know, was passed right after the crash, don't hold me to it, but right after the crash of 29, maybe close to that. And they passed it so that the banks no longer be able to keep your money. And the Glass-Steagall Act also kept banks from meddling into, you know, instead of being investment houses, they were banks. You had your investment houses and you had your banks. You had your brokerage houses and you had your bank. And a good deal of the problem that's come along is when they repealed that act. And now they're all banks. I understand that American Express recently has had themselves declared a bank. And the problem was then that all of these so-called banks could deal in just about anything they wanted to. They could deal in securities, they could deal in this, that, and the other, and that's where they got into trouble. They got greedy. And, of course, as is usually the case, and with most kinds of deregulation that takes place in this country, deregulation leads to a hell of a mess in many cases because the regulation was put in there to stave off some of these problems, and when they deregulated, why, Katie, bar the door, because here they come busting through it with the greed and corruption, and that's exactly what happened on Wall Street. So I think, and I might have oversimplified that, but it was to keep America's financial institutions strong and to keep them separate, Let them do what they do best. Let the brokerage houses be brokerage houses. Let the banks be actual banks. But when they let it go and let all of them start meddling in whatever they wanted to, why then when this Wall Street thing got totally out of control, and who can argue right now that it isn't totally out of control? I think it most certainly is. We're going to pause for a break coming up, and stay with us. We'll be back.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Isn't how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Isn't how many years can a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? Isn't how many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? Isn't how many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Yes, and how many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? Yes, and how many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? Yes, and how many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
One of my favorites. One of my favorites. Blowing in the wind. My friends, there's a lot of answers blowing in the wind right now that will determine where this country goes in the next few months. I'm hoping that the new administration, new leadership in Washington will put this country back on the right path again. Path that it was on for many, many years before these right-wing extremists got a hold of it and got the country in their clutches and robbed and bilked this country out of every dime that they could. And now it's left to us to repair the damage once again and to take this country back up to where it used to be once again. And we'll do it. We'll do it. But it's kind of tough right now. It's kind of tough. I know that some of you don't have a complete grasp of the financial situation of many of our fellow Americans. Most of you do. But I get emails all the time from people saying, hey, you know, it's not as bad as you say it is and all that. You know, I'm asking everyone that you make every effort to educate yourself as to the gravity of the situation they're facing right now. Just don't take the pundits' words for it. Don't take the radio shows and TV news shows. Educate yourself on the situation and instead of just sitting around and wondering why people just don't get up and get going, you know. This morning I spoke to a man and his wife who are so despondent over their financial situation that I worry about their well-being. They moved here 6 years ago. And they bought their home 4 years ago with a healthy down payment, and they'd saved up over a dozen years. He was in the building industry here in Florida, and he lost his job, and she's a teacher. Although right now she's subbing because of raising a special needs grade schooler, a junior high student, and a college student. And their home's going to go into foreclosure, and their savings are long gone. And they depend upon friends and neighbors for transportation because their car's sitting in the driveway with a bad transmission. And friends and neighbors are taking turns loaning them their cars on days when they don't have to drive. And their oldest son has had to drop out of college because he can no longer afford the tuition. He's working at Burger King to help out the family. He ought to be in school. And the dad's unemployment lapsed a long time ago, and he's been actively looking for work. And the only job opportunities that have come up are a couple thousand miles away from here. What do they do? What happens to people like these? Good, hard-working American folks. Hard-working, God-fearing, decent people who have a good work ethic and always have, and have the traditional family values. What do they do when their backs are against the wall? And you hear so many people say, well, sure, just run out and get yourself another job. Have you tried that lately? Do you know that people like him have a hard time getting a low-wage job even because employers know that he won't stay there if something better comes along, so they'd rather hire somebody with lesser qualifications? What does he do? The government cheese is gone. The local food pantries are empty. Charities have very, very little to work with. Friends and neighbors are financially strapped, too, although they've done what they can to help. Can any of you listening really look at people like this and not have compassion for what they're going through? Can you look at them and say, oh, well, it's your life, We're Americans, by God, you just pull yourself up by your bootstraps and get going, and you'll see it'll be okay. My life's okay. If yours isn't, well, that's just tough luck, buddy. Too bad. I'm hearing that attitude more and more. And it's not because people are necessarily uncaring. I don't think they realize the gravity of the situation we're involved in right now. I really don't. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy, this is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
I have something kind of strange going on in my little neck of the woods.
Yeah?
I live close to a kind of an artery, I guess you call it, road, main thoroughfare or something.
Mm-hmm.
And my bank has been there quite a while, but it's changed hands a lot. And it used to be like owned down here, you know, somebody owned it from here, but it's you know, nationwide now.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, a couple of years ago, they built another bank, like almost, it's like diagonally across from my bank. Anyway, recently, they've been building another place. We were trying to figure out what it was, you know, while they were building it. And they finally got a name on it, and it's Wachovia Bank, and it's like about a block across the street from these other banks.
Mm-hmm.
And now on down the road, I say half a mile, across the street, they're building another bank. Can you tell me what next going on?
Well.
Is that a standard now?
I know of two or three that are under construction as well. I think they're probably planned before all this happened, but the buyouts and, you know, whoever's buying them out will get these new banks along with it and their good deals that they made.
Isn't that strange, though?
Oh, they've always got money to build banks, don't they? Always got money to build more banks.
Why so many so close together? I mean, we've already got other banks. There's other banks, you know, on down the road.
Because it is so ridiculously profitable.
Is that right?
You bet it is. You bet it is.
I just thought it was so strange, you know, with all of this bailout and everything.
Yeah, I know. You wouldn't think, but banks usually find a way. And, you know, the thing is, if they do fail, why, they get bought out by somebody else and keep right on humming. Yeah, Wachovia, I'm trying to think where they started. Are they the ones that, I think they started in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm not exactly sure, but I think so. I think that's where.
Didn't they almost go out?
Yeah.
I thought.
It's hard to keep track of who's buying who nowadays. The big fish keep swallowing up the smaller ones. And
I've been working on this building quite a while, and people were wondering what it was, and all of a sudden you had these drive-through things, and then they put the sign up, open in soon.
Yeah. Well, I can't keep track of all these banks. I've tried to, and they just keep going on and on. And like I said, all this bailout money that they got from the feds, they're not loaning it out. They're paying themselves bonus and buying more banks. So
this is pretty much going on.
Oh, yeah.
Where you are.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
And I want to tell you one more thing. I had a C-SPAN on earlier in the morning, and I went to sleep on it. I woke up, and they were playing the interview that Charlie did with the Bushes, Mr. and Ms. Bush.
Yeah.
Did you see it at all?
Saw some of it. The part I saw about 10 minutes of it, and it was enough to make me sick.
Well, that was exactly what happened to me.
I'm stunned that even he would resort to laying the blame on others like he did during that interview.
Well,
incredible.
Let me tell you what I woke up to. They were talking. She was talking about the AIDS thing. It was what I woke up to. But then there was also another. I don't know how many people were interviewing him. There was a blonde woman. You know, there's always a blonde with Republicans. And I don't know who she was, but she said, "Oh, I want to ask you about your daughters. They sacrifice their time to go over there and work with AIDS people, and you must be so proud of them." She said, "President Bush, you must have done something right." And I said, "Listen, I ain't listening to this. How much sacrifice did those girls make?"
Party time all their lives. I guess it's time to do something.
But it's like, you know, that they'd gone, if they'd gone and served, you know, for a long, long time, I can see it's all right for them to do that. But it was just sickening the way, and not just them, it was the reporters. And Bush said something about that when they were in Africa, he'd say, "God is good," and they'd say, he said that always answering, "Yes, he is. He's the best." And he said, "That was just warm my heart."
Well, I'm glad he had a little warm
and
in there.
And, you know, he's joyous every day.
Yeah, I know. Joyous. He said his time in the White House has been joyous.
What? That's talk for the religious right.
Sure.
Because they say you don't necessarily be happy, but you can be joyous.
Yeah, he's had 9/11, two wars, and a terrible recession, and I guess that's a lot to be really happy about. I don't know.
Well, but anyway, I'm like you. It was just sickening.
Yeah, it really was.
I said, "I'm not listening to this. This is..."
No, I had to go. I couldn't do it. I couldn't do
but
it.
The way the reporters were acting, too, you know.
Yeah, just fawn over him.
Yeah.
You know, just because he's been the president of the United States, that doesn't mean you have to fawn over him. He's still got warts and all like everybody else, you know.
One more thing I heard on Tom Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was I sleep half the time. I've got some problem. They finally think they found it. But he said there was somebody on there with him, and they were talking about Martinez.
Oh, yeah.
Not running.
Right.
you know, the senator, our senator?
Right.
Did you hear any reason for that besides to be with his family? I mean, the real reason?
I'll bet you there is something behind this more than wanting to spend time.
Well, that's
time
what
with
they
him.
Say. They said on Tom Hartman.
Every time they say they're quitting to spend time more time with the family, they're not quitting to spend more time with the family. Every time that's come up. I'm not buying it. Not buying it one bit.
You know what they said?
What?
I thought maybe you might have had it.
No.
Jeb Bush wants to run.
Oh, well, yeah, I know that. Jeb wants
to run. And they told him if he said what was good for him, he better get out of it.
Well, Alex Sink run against him. She's pretty doggone popular, and she'll beat him. She'll beat him. But Alex Sink, the financial controller here in Florida, I think Alex Sink will beat him, but we'll see. But I dread the thought of another Bush getting him.
I know it. And they were talking about that they'd heard George the Third was going to be, you know, the one that ran in.
Just go away. Just go away, Bushes. Go
Amen.
Away. Find the farthest corner of this earth and
right.
Go away.
Right. Okay.
Thanks, Juanita. Always good to hear from you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, people that fawn over Jeb Bush, and I'll give you the fact that he's a lot more suave and debonair than his brother, his idiot brother. Some guy got really offended by me a couple of weeks ago in his presence, and I wasn't kidding when I called George Bush an imbecile. And what I said was, comparatively speaking, to the rest of the people who've been president in the last century, he is an imbecile. And this guy got all hot and bothered because I said that. Now, he may not be an imbecile in the strictest sense of the word, but compared to the intellect of the other people that have been president, oh, baby. Oh, but, you know, they fawn over Jeb Bush. And he's going to run for Mel Martinez's Senate seat. You know, tell me it's not so. Somebody please tell me that the voters in Florida are smart enough to know that another Bush placed in Washington would be a disaster. I mean, let alone making us the laughingstock of the country once again here in Florida. Jeb Bush, he's another politician who's been lucky enough to have his background almost completely ignored by the press. When Jeb was still governor here in 2006, he worked with the Department of Transportation, and a lot of people here in Florida remember this. A lot of people conveniently like to forget about it. But he worked with the Department of Transportation here to grease the skids for his former business partner, what was his name, Armando Codina. And the reason he did this was to facilitate a major merger of the Codina Group with the Florida East Coast Industries. And they're the owners of the Florida East Coast Railway System. And then in May, the FEC was suddenly bought by a group of private equity investors with this Fortress Investment Group. And guess what? Codina, Jeb's former business partner, he walked away with $255 million from the sale of his FEC stock. I know Jeb Bush was popular here in Florida, but people just don't know a lot enough, anyway, about Jeb Bush. He's got a great smile. He's real friendly and gregarious and all that. And without question, the most sociably acceptable one of the Bushes. But there's this weirdness of Florida. You take up in the north part of the state. It's Alabama. And down in the southeast part of Florida, it's Cuba and New York. And then you got the Disney Middle up in what we call the I-4 corridor. And the Jebster's kind of politics plays really well up north of the north part of the state. But if he runs for the Senate, his opponent most likely on the Democratic side is going to be Alex Sink, and my guess is that he's going to have a tough time. Sink is a wonderful and highly respected former banker who's now the chief, Florida's chief financial officer. She's a very, very strong opponent. And Bush's background as a semi-corrupt businessman who participated in that scheme, remember that, to sell water pumps in Nigeria? Listen, this is a family, this Bush family, that from start to finish, from Prescott Bush right up till today, this is a family that's unbelievably corrupt. But we don't find out about that unless the press goes out and does their job. And Jeb Bush has never been subjected to that kind of scrutiny, the kind of scrutiny he ought to be subjected to. And if he does run for the Senate, I believe that the newspapers here in Florida will finally dig into his background and see that his life, his public life, behind the scenes, has been just as disgraceful as his brothers and his fathers and his grandfathers. So we shall see. We shall see. Go ahead and do it, Jeb, but God, the thought of it just makes me absolutely cringe. Just cringe. And I hear old Newt Gingrich is back at it again. He's obviously posturing himself to take a leadership role in the Republican Party ahead of the next election cycle. And, you know, whenever Newt starts barking, you can bet he's getting ready to roll out another one of his schemes, like his famous contract with America, which in truth was nothing more than a gimmick to fool the American public into thinking that the Republican Party actually cared about the average working man and woman in this country, and really was nothing more than a power grab to take over Washington and loot the Treasury. And let's face it, it's worked. But behind all of that, Gingrich and these crazy right-wing pals are wanting to establish some sort of a theocratic Christian zealotry movement whereby only white Anglo-Christians will have any say in our government. And don't you kid yourself, that's what a lot of those guys are working toward. And you got to admit that those Republicans are a wild and wacky bunch. But you think of some of the people right now who are trying to consolidate power within their ranks in the Republican Party. Of course, you got Sarah Palin. She's leading the pack, and then you got Mike Huckabee, both of whom are going to be staying in the conservative public eye just as much as they possibly can. And Palin's beginning to remind me of those guys who used to show up at sporting events. You remember those guys that used to always show up with those rainbow-colored afros holding up those John 3:16 signs just to get attention? Hey, me, don't forget about me. Seriously, when I see Sarah Palin, I don't know whether to laugh or to cry. I laugh because the idea that anybody as obviously clueless and out of touch as she could even be considered for the elected office of City Council of Wasilla, Alaska. The idea of her even holding that office is about as absurd a thought as one can conjure up. But then on the other hand, I could cry when I realize that there's millions of Americans who are caught up in this Palin mania, and they honestly think she's capable of holding the office of President of the United States. And the idea that so many Americans would be willing to turn over the reins of power to someone who appears to be the emptiest of empty suits is really worrisome to me. I really don't know how anybody, even somebody in some sort of a drunken stupor, could think that that woman has even the tiniest amount of the ability it takes to guide this country. But when I stop and think about it, it's probably the same, probably it is the same crowd who thought George W. Bush could be a leader. It's the old fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me thing. And of course you got Huckabee in there pitching too. Have you seen his TV show? Oh, God. He's keeping his name out there with this stupid Fox weekend program, which would be canceled if anybody else were hosting it. He fancies himself as some sort of an entertainer and a comedian. I'm sorry, Mike, but you're neither one. But he plans on challenging Palin for the leadership of the pathetic Republican Party, and they are pathetic right now. And you can bet, you can just bet on that, and you can also bet on that Gingrich is going to be hanging around as well. Anybody that isn't afraid of this Christo fascism that's been talked about, you better take a look at what's going on. You really better. Man, oh man, you look at the leadership in that group, and it's like, oh my God. It really is frightening. It is somewhat comforting to know that the election is over and they will not be in power for a while. We can only hope and pray that they will never, ever, ever be in power again in their present form, because they are dangerous to America. You will never hear me say that I want to see the demise of the Republican Party. Never. Because I believe we need a two-party system. I would even welcome a strong third party. Don't ever want there to be a one-party system in this country. But I do want to see the demise of this group of lunatics that are running the Republican Party right now. They've got no idea. Other than that, me, I'm going to do what's best for me, and to hell with all the rest of you. I hope the Democrats that were recently elected don't take their eye off the ball now, just because we've gotten big gains in the House and big gains in the Senate. Can't relax. And that means more than ever, you and I cannot relax. More than ever, you and I are going to have to hold their feet to the fire, because they're not always going to do things the way we want them done, and we deserve to have things done the way we want them done. We elected these people to be our representatives, and it's now up to us to see that they truly fulfill their obligations as our representatives and do the bidding of the people instead of the corporate America and K Street. I don't think there's ever been a more important time in American history than right now, these next 2 or 3 months, when all of us, after Obama gets sworn in and the new Congress gets sworn in, they better understand right off the bat where we stand. And that we're not going to take any more of this lunacy, any more of this torture, any more of this never-ending war, any more of this idiotic foreign policy, any more of this take the State Department and hide it, don't even have them play a part in our government anymore. No. It's time that we speak up. It's time we make sure that it is not business as usual in Washington, D.C. It is a new day. It's a new day for we the people. That's who it's a new day for. Not a new day for the politicians. And so it is up to you, and it's up to me. When this new government gets in, we're going to hold their feet to the fire. You mark my word, we will hold their feet to the fire. And if we do, they'll perform. And if they perform, they won't have to worry about getting reelected. This is an important time. Don't forget that. Because some of them in Washington surely will. You can always count on that. I want to thank you so much.